The Mac Observer's Mac Geekgab, number 43, for March 13th, 2006.
Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. I'm Dave Hamilton. I'm here with John Braun. Hi, John.
What the heck was that?
I had the kids playing in the studio this weekend, so I recorded a little intro there from my daughter.
That's hilarious. Now, Child Services is okay with this? This wasn't done under duress or anything?
No, I don't believe it was done under duress. No,
okay.
She was quite enjoying herself. She's
got a future, I think, as a podcaster.
Oh, yeah, she's got a mind of her own, that's for sure.
Yeah, we may want to get her opinion on some topics here.
Oh, no.
No?
No, we leave her opinion where it is. Why are the lights flickering in my studio?
Ooh.
This is not good.
Well, you're up in the sticks there, you know?
Oh, my God. Well, tonight we are talking about broadband geekery. Specifically, we're talking about cable modems and what all their little stats mean, how you can see their stats, and what matters and what's not important whatsoever. So that's the topic of the show tonight. I know.
Yeah, I think some of this could apply to DSL as well, but
absolutely.
Some may not.
Right.
My reflection has been DSL is kind of like cable, but it's slower and more prone to problems. But
I know it's
like the
typically
ISDN
slower.
I started with I went straight from modem to telephone modem, analog modem to
cable modem.
So I never went through the trauma. But I know you did DSL. So.
I had DSL for a short period when it was actually faster than what the cable company offered. When I was in Connecticut, they had. Charter had really slow cable, like 768 downstream, and so the DSL at 1.5 megabits was even faster. So we're going to talk about that and a whole lot more. But first, our sponsor, and tonight's sponsor is AudioEngineUSA.com, makers of the fine AudioEngine A5 speakers. The speakers are desktop speakers. They sit on your desk. They're these nice white cubes. They've kind of got a chic look to them. Two different speakers in each one, two drivers, a low-end driver, a high-end driver, and they sound amazing. On top of the speaker, on top of one of the speakers is a input for your iPod, as well as a headphone, a headphone jack, and a USB port so that you can actually charge your iPod while you're playing them through the speakers. You can hook them up to your computer, too. That's the AudioEngine A5 speakers from AudioEngineUSA.com.
Mm-hmm. They rock the house.
They do. Yeah, they sound great.
At least they rock my house.
Yeah, your neighbors complained yet?
I don't know. I can't hear them.
Maybe they need to get a pair of A5s.
I'll mention it to them.
So tell me what you did this week with your cable modem, John. We went through a whole bunch of different things. Kind of started our conversation pretty much right after the show went up on Monday night, and it's continued from there, so.
Well, I, kind of looked at it and, kind of got absorbed by the blinking lights, and it was pretty soothing, actually.
Was it?
Yeah.
Well, you can actually find out more information. That's right.
Yeah, so, one of the first things is, this is a network device, so I'm figuring, there's got to be a way to rap with it, to talk to it.
Absolutely. Every cable modem, right? Can do this. If you go into what John's alluding to is if you go into your web browser and point it to, and this is going to be weird, but do it anyway, point it to 192.168.100.1. That's 192.168.100.1. Most cable modems will return a status screen. I know the Ambit ones, you have to actually log in, and I think the password is root, believe it or not. But.
Ooh, good one.
Yeah.
And what you'll notice, that 192 address, for those of you keeping notes at home here, 192 is one of those non-routable IP addresses, one of the ranges where it's an IP address that you're not going to find on the internet.
That's right.
There are a few others there, the 10 series, and there's a couple others.
And the 172 dot something, and I can't remember what it is.
Yeah, so that's reserved for devices that are private. One of the addresses. So yeah, if and I think both our modems, if you punch in that address in your standard web browser, you're going to get something.
That's right.
You probably don't have to log in, at least in my case, and I think in your case, you get something.
Yep.
Now I've got a,
which modem do you have, John?
All right, what I have here, looking at the screen here, let's see.
What brand modem? Yeah, there you go.
It's a Scientific Atlanta Webstar DPC2100.
Okay.
Which I recently swapped out. I did have a, I think it was a Motorola.
Surfboard?
Was that surfboard, yeah. And the problem I had with that is that the power connector, I think there was a cold solder joint because it would kind of intermittently just reboot. And then I would see the all the
bad
lights flashing, especially the power light, you know, which indicated, at least with that one, that it was power cycling. And if I jiggled the connector, it would do it again. Sometimes, you know, I did all this weird stuff, you know, trying to tie a rubber band and and it just, no. So
that's not worth it, man. No.
Yeah. So I called Cablevision and I'm like, what do I do? And they're like, well, bring it in. We'll give you another one. And when I showed up, they swapped it out for this Scientific Atlanta, which I'm very, very happy with it. I'm getting wonderful rates. These guys here, Optimum Online is one of the better services, and I'm just getting excellent speeds here. And what do you have on your end, Dave?
Well, I'm John's story actually led us to an interesting anecdote, and that is that if you're having a problem with the cable modem, really it doesn't matter what brand you have for the most part. You know, just bring it back to the cable company; they'll swap it out for you. If you're renting it, of course, if you own it, you've either got to rent a new one or buy one. But it is not worth messing with a troublesome cable modem. These days, I'm actually using a Motorola surfboard, I think the 4100, but it's uneventful. It just, you know, you plug it in and it works, and pretty much I don't worry about it until I have a problem. But
yeah, that's good now that you have this DOCSIS standard, because in the bad old days, actually, I was a bit ahead of the curve when I was at my last location. I had a Tarion, and this was through everybody's favorite former cable modem company, At Home, which that was before standards, where it was pretty much proprietary, and that was the only game in town. Right now, as far as I know, if you really wanted to, you could go to just about any office supply place, and if you chose to, buy your own, of course. And
that's right.
In my case, and probably your case, it's thrown in with the, as long as I pay them the monthly fee, the modem is free.
There you go. And some places it's like $5 to rent. You know, that's one of those things where you got to decide whether it's worth it to you or not. But anyway, back to our status screen that we started with. Really, every one of them is going to be different, but there's going to be a couple of main sections. One is going to be sort of the overview that tells you, yes, the cable modem is online, or no, it's not. Some of them have a way where you can look at their logs. But really, the screen that you're looking for is something that talks about signal strength, because this is basically the first line of troubleshooting here between you and, or the last line, depending on how you're looking at it, between you and the cable company. So it's good to know what's going on here and why things are the way they are. There's a couple of specific parameters, or results rather, that you want to look at. The first is the downstream power level. And downstream power level is the amount of juice, if you will, that the cable modem is getting from the cable company. And the way the downstream works, it is your cable modem actually tunes into a channel, just like your TV does, but it's a channel that your TV can't get. And that's where the downstream comes from. And I think there can be multiple channels depending on the way the cable's configured. You don't get to control that. But your modem should pick the best one. Right. And downstream power level, from what I understand, is supposed to range from -15 dBmV to +15 dBmV. And from what I understand from talking to cable technicians, the closer to zero you are, the better. Is that basically what you've heard, John?
Hmm. You know, I don't know in my case, because there's a program we're going to talk about in a moment here. And mine is consistently zero.
Aha. So your cable modem doesn't report it to you.
That is the, at least the program we're going to talk about in a moment, that's what it says. It says it's either zero or the modem chooses not to tell you what it is.
Gotcha. Well, it'll fluctuate a little bit. So if you're not seeing any fluctuation, then chances are it's just reporting nothing.
Yeah. So mine calls it receive power level.
Yeah. Receive or downstream. That's right. The next one, of course, would be the upstream power level to look at. Now, with any of these power levels, if it's outside of that range, you've got something bigger to worry about. And we can actually talk about what you can do to try and make your ranges better. But the second level to look at is the upstream power level, and that's supposed to go anywhere between positive 8 and positive 58 dBmV. This is the amount of power that your cable modem has to send out in order to get a signal back to the cable company, the head end or whatever it is there. Mm-hmm. The higher this number is, the more noise you have on the line that the cable modem has to overcome. So, you know, I've seen it. I don't think I've ever seen it below 30. But I guess it's, you know, the lower it goes, the better. But even in you have the upstream.
Well, mine right now, and it's pretty consistent. Mine's 48.
Hmm.
But I don't think there's a problem. Now, there's another figure which I do not see on this. Now, my modem in particular has a very, I mean, it's showing me like maybe six different values. There's the receive, the transmit. It says cable modem status, which it says operational. So I'm going to trust it's happy.
That's right. Well, the fact that we're talking over Skype is proof alone.
Yeah.
Everything's just fine.
But yeah, so I got 48 for my transmit power level.
Okay, that's pretty high. That they say that once you start getting above 50, you're going to start having problems. And my experience has been that's true. And then there's one last thing to talk about, and then we can talk about what if there's anything you as a homeowner or, you know, cable subscriber can do to make that better. But the last one's the signal-to-noise ratio, and that's on the receive side. And the signal-to-noise ratio should be 30 decibels or higher, 30 dB. If it's less than 24 dB, you won't get a connection in most cases. So this is basically the amount of juice that you're getting from the cable company in relation to how much noise is on the line. And it obviously has to be a clear enough signal for it to do the magic that it's going to do for you.
Mm-hmm.
I needed a sip of tea. So basically, the one thing that impacts this level that's controllable by you is splitters on the line.
Oh, yes. Oh, splitters.
Yeah.
Oh,
now, it could just, if you're having a problem, you know, and you notice that your signal strength or your signal levels are, you know, at or above tolerance levels, you can try this, and then it may simply be a problem with the cable buried in your, you know, in your yard, or the cable, you know, running from the street to your house or whatever.
Oh, yes. And I had that not with this modem, but with the prior one. Right now, I'm very close to the pole, so I'm not worried about signal loss from a long cable. But you remember where I used to live?
Yep.
We had a 300-foot run.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it was running through the trees. And at least in this part of town, there's all sorts of critters. And some of them seemed to think that this was something interesting to eat. So, the reason I knew that there was something wrong is that the modem would spontaneously keep resetting itself.
You seem to have that problem a lot. And that's typically the problem. Yeah, when you have a tolerance issue where the modem is, you know, not quite in or not quite out of range, but at the edge, it'll do that. It'll keep trying to kind of resync as though you reset it, you know, as though you repowered it. It's going to keep going through and trying to grab a hold of a better signal.
Yeah, and in this case, with the prior one, with the at-home service, which, you know, they're not around anymore, but it took a couple of calls to the cable provider to say, you know, there's something wrong. And I still remember there was a tech that came out, and he's like, oh, no, everything's great.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, it's still resetting. There's something really wrong here. And I called again, and another tech who seemed to know what he was doing said, no, this is terrible. You know, I think the other guy just didn't, you know, relish running to spend a half a day running 300-foot of cable.
That's right.
Because it came out of the pocket of the cable company and not us. So, but once they replaced it, and apparently, you know, something or someone chewed on it, everything was great. But long runs are, you know, bad for, you know, any medium.
Prone to problems. Loss. That's right. Yeah. So the splitter, in addition to the critters in John's former yard, splitters that you've put on the line can actually make a difference here. What a splitter will do, typically, if you've got a two-way splitter, you lose 7 decibels with the whole splitter. Typically, it's split 3.5 on one side and 3.5 on the other. And what that'll do is that'll lower your receive power level and raise your upstream power level because you're putting a filter in, essentially, of 3 decibels. That, or 3.5 decibels. That can make a difference or not, and sometimes it can actually help you. I had an overactive head end at one point where they were sending me too much signal. So by putting a splitter in line, I had the room on the upstream. By putting a splitter in line, I was actually able to bring the level down. There are some splitters out there that instead of doing 3.5 on one and 3.5 on the other, do 1 dB on one and 6 dB on the other. And this they call the texts commonly refer to it as a tap splitter, because it takes as clean of a signal as it can and sends it out that 1 dB port. So if you've got a cable modem and then digital cable and all that, a lot of times they'll put one of these splitters in that just gets 1 dB off the line and sends it straight to your cable modem, and then use the 6 and amplify that out elsewhere. So typically amplifiers don't work with cable lines for cable modems, but they work with just about everything else. So
yep. So splitters can cause a problem. Yep. It could be also your house wiring, depending on who wired it up and how many splitters.
Like, yeah, you may not be aware. You may have 6 or 8 splitters in your house by all.
Yeah, and actually, when I got this place, the good news was that, you know, somebody ran cable pretty much to every room in the house. The bad news was there were multiple splitters. There were some in the basement. There were some in the attic. And yeah, each one takes out a little signal.
There you go.
So no, you know, try to get a map of your wiring and stuff like that. Especially with they do have do-it-yourself kits, and you may be in good shape if you don't have a lot of splitters.
That's right. That's right. So that's what the generic diagnostics inside your cable modem tell you. There are a couple of other utilities out there, one in particular that John stumbled onto called DoxDiag, and that will take this and dig even deeper. And one of the things that it will tell you is how fast your cable modem is. And that can be a very interesting statistics. Your cable modem can run, what is it? Can it run above 20 megabits a second, John? I think a lot of them can, right? Out of the box.
I don't know the figure off the top of my head, but a lot of them can probably go a lot
there's
faster.
There's
a maximum speed.
Yes.
And then there's a speed that the cable company tells the modem is the maximum speed.
Right.
So they cap it. Now,
that's right.
In the past, and I don't know all the gory details, but from what I understand, in the past, there was a way for the user to kind of fiddle with the modem and to kind of remove the cap.
Well, you still can. Most of the time, if your cable company catches you doing that, they will stop providing you service altogether.
That's,
so, because it basically falls into the theft of service arena.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't want to do that.
Don't try to do that, because if you get... Yeah.
But it is good to know. It is good to know, especially if you're paying for a certain speed and you want to make sure. First, you want to make sure that your modem gets it. And you can look at that and you can see it with this DoxDiag. We'll put a link in the show notes. It's a command line utility. It's not pretty, but it does report some data that you may not be able to see in your modem's diagnostics. The one modem that I had was an Ambit, and that actually let me see it right on the normal diagnostics page. But otherwise, you've got to use this DoxDiag thing. Note, though, that some modems won't work with DoxDiag if the cable company has turned off support for utilities like this, and specifically just turned off support for SNMP.
Simple Network Management Protocol, which is a favorite for network admins, because routers and all sorts of other network equipment conform to this spec, and it basically allows you to go to a device, and I think it's called a MIB, and basically you can go to the device and say, tell me all about yourself, and also, I believe, set some parameters.
Once you've made sure that the speed is right with the DoxDiag, then you want to make sure the speed is right on your computer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there are countless websites out there that I've found to test this. I used to use the one at Broadband Reports or DSLReports.com. Did you ever wind up using that one, John?
Yeah, that one's pretty good, though. Sometimes you had to, they limited the number of people that could do it, or you had to buy a membership, things like that.
But,
I like the one that you told me about.
Yeah, the one I've liked lately is one from Speakeasy. It's always easy to remember. It's speakeasy.net/speed test. So very easy, and you can pick they've got, about 5 or 6 different stations that you can test from. So pick one that appears close to you and hit the thing.
Yeah.
And
what do you do? Boston? Is Boston your closest?
No, there's
or
a New York one.
I do New York.
Yeah. 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 And actually, I've noticed that sometimes it won't report the highest speed that you can go, simply because the traffic between, you know, me and the testing station is, you know, too much to transmit all of that at once.
Mm-hmm.
But try it late at night, usually. Good time to scope things out and see what kind of throughput you're getting.
Yeah, or you could try if you have a fellow geek nearby and they'd like to set up their machine and do a quick file download. Because if somebody's on a circuit that's close to you, I would say you probably... Oh, no, that's not going to do it, right?
Because their modem is capped.
You're right. Because
their modem's capped.
The download and the upload speed is we're going to touch on in a moment. So, no, that will not work.
No, that won't.
So. In many cases, it'll get capped by the upload speed. And you know, that's a funny thing. You would think the speeds would be the same.
But they're not. It's asynchronous, right? Cable modem typically... What, is it not supposed to use that word?
Well, I guess you could. Okay. Well, I think it's intentional depending on the class of service that you order from.
That's right.
I think for most consumer type accounts, I think the reasoning is they don't want you running a 24/7 type server arrangement.
Right.
Because bandwidth is money. And,
that's right.
So and I believe a lot of them will have a business or a commercial account if you want to get the honking upstream bandwidth.
Yeah, and I don't know enough about how the cable head ends are built. But I get the feeling that the cable network is built to send more information downstream than upstream, which only makes sense, right, with digital TV and all that good stuff. It's just blasting the stuff at you and not expecting a whole lot back. So that may be at least the initial reason for the downstream being significantly faster than the upstream. But, of course, now they've been building these things, you know, with this in mind. So who knows? Yeah, but... you're downstream there, John. You've actually got you've got one of the fastest in the country. Here, where I am here, I think we've got 8 megabits down and 768K up. And that's the second notch of service here. Normally, it's 6 megabits down and I think 256 or 384. I think it's 384K up.
Yep. And here, they just upgraded it recently.
Yep.
It used to be I was capped at 10 megabits.
Whoa.
Downstream.
Wow, that's still really fast.
Which is like, you know, old-style Ethernet.
Oh, yeah, like 10 base T, man. That's right.
Wow. Now what they did, of course, in my G5 here, at least, I have, you know, gigabit, but that's another story. But my router is 100. But in this case, yeah, I mean, that's... And I have reached that speed.
Really?
But I noticed one day, and I'm like, gee, you know, I heard Cablevision's going to do this, or Optimum Line's going to do this. And I ran DocsDiag and checked, and sure enough, it reported, you know, before I definitely saw it was 10. And then I saw, ooh... It's 15, and I did verify it with some of those speed tests.
What's your upstream now?
My upstream is right now 2.
2 megabits?
Yeah.
Dude, that's more than twice as fast as mine.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, these Optimum guys are pretty good. Now, the bad news is that, for the most part, no matter where you are, I think you only have one cable provider.
That's right.
Maybe some people out there, and please tell us, but... I think typically, at least where I am, there's one cable provider and one DSL provider.
Yeah, well, DSL, that's an interesting tangent to go on. The phone companies are mandated to resell their services. So you may think that you can get DSL from 10 different providers, but it's all coming in on the same line. The phone companies, and I think it's a fixed rate. They've got to sell it at, you know, 30% off retail or something like that, maybe 60% of retail, something in there. And so, you know, that's how all these phone companies years ago, not that long ago, maybe 6 or 7 years ago, started popping up and saying, well, if your credit's no good and you want to do the, you know, a prepaid phone, we'll do that for you. And it cost you a fortune, but at least you could get a phone. You were still using the same wires that you would have used before. You're just billing through a different provider is really what's happening. So you can get DSL from multiple people, but it's still the same line in the end. In most cases, like John said, if you've got, you know, multiple, if you're sure that you've got truly multiple options, that's interesting. I'd like to know about that because I didn't think the FCC allowed that.
And I went for cable immediately. It was funny because actually the first day that I got my house, like the day I did the closing.
Yeah.
You know, and I stayed home and, you know, was just kicking back, enjoying, you know, the joys of homeownership.
Right.
And the doorbell rang. I'm like, wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
And it was the cable guy. And I'm like, cool, because he probably got a termination notice.
Oh.
And he's like, can I help you? And I'm like, yes, give me cable modem now.
I always book it in advance. I book it, you know, weeks ahead of time just to make sure that it smooths right in.
Yeah, and then like one or two days later, I got one of those doorknob things on my doorknob from the phone company saying, hey, would you like DSL? And it's like, nah, too late,
no thanks.
Sorry.
Yeah, should have been here that day.
So it costs less, typically, but you get less throughput. So it depends on how much you're willing to pay. I think here I pay like $50 a month for, but with the speeds I'm getting, I'm thrilled.
Yeah, yours is pretty expensive, but it's you know, expensive and worth it, I think. So now you know how fast your, you know about your connection to the cable modem's network or the cable company's network. You know that that's good. You know what your speed is supposed to be. You've tested it. Now, you know, is there anything you can do to make things faster, right? And there's all sorts of people out there that for years, especially on the Windows side, I find that more than on the Mac side, but are talking about, you know, receive windows and buffers and all this other stuff. You know, does it matter?
And yeah, the Windows people like fiddling with things anyways. That's right.
They're forced to. That's right. And the short answer is maybe. It might matter. Depending on what's going on. Back in the old day, the idea is, and TCP hasn't changed since, you know, the day Milo Medin came out with it, right? Or, you know, invented it, and then it went on from there. But the way it works is you're constantly transmitting packets back and forth, and the packets are little bunches of data, and they have a start and an end and various other things in the middle that we're just not going to go into because, A, it's boring for most of you, and B, I'm sure I would get it wrong. So suffice to say, it's a packet. And what you do is if someone's sending a bunch of packets to you, you get the packet and you say, yep, it looks good, thanks, and you send back, I got it, or an acknowledgement, right? You act back to them. Well, if you waited for each packet to, you know, if you waited for the packet to come in to examine it and turn around and say, yep, thanks, there would be a major delay. You know, you get this little burst and you wait and little burst and return, little burst and return. Thankfully, it doesn't work that way. The packets just keep blasting at you and you start sending your acknowledgments back. And the sending computer, when you first talk to them, you negotiate how big, how many packets you want to get at any point in time without having acknowledged them. And as long as that buffer is bigger than however long it takes you to acknowledge a packet, again, you're looking at size of the packets versus speed of the connection and latency, which is the amount of time it takes a packet to get from one place to another. That's your, you know, as long as that's big enough, you're A-OK. If it's bigger than you need, you're OK as long as you don't run out of RAM on your computer, which, again, isn't a huge issue these days. Would you say that's right so far?
Yeah, now in the bad old days, I would reflect here. Now, back when, you know, you and I were wee little geeks.
geeks in training.
Geekettes or whatever you want to call it. Geeks
I think we were
training.
Just geeks. I don't think there was ever a geek in training back when we were growing up, right?
And we had these, you know, horrible devices called analog modems. And, you know, they had pathetic speeds like 2,400 bits per second and stuff like that.
Terrible.
And you know, phone lines and to an extent I say DSL is that copper wire was not really meant for sending digital data, especially, you know, I mean, telephone lines were meant to send voice data with
right.
Limited bandwidth, and also, you know, so it was relatively slow and the latency was terrible, so you had to make these itty bitty packet sizes, because also since the line, you know, was used for voice and not for digital data, you tended to get errors. So you wanted to make the packet size relatively small because you were pretty certain that something was going to screw up.
That's right.
So you didn't want to send a whole boatload of data and then find out, whoops. So back then in the bad old days, the packet sizes tended to be small and there was a lot of back and forth with the error correction because something would probably mess up. Right now with, you know, with the cable modems and the DSL, and now, you know, some people even have, I think Verizon's doing this.
Fios, yeah, fiber.
Some places on the East Coast with fiber, you have a much, you know, smaller chance of something of errors. You'll still get errors, but I would say a much smaller chance than going over a medium like a telephone modem or you know, a voice line, which really wasn't meant to send computer data in the first place. So just reflecting back on why you needed small packet sizes back then.
There you go. So, but the current implementation works fine as long as your latency is fairly low. And again, latency is the time it takes essentially you to between the time it takes to send a packet out and get an answer back. So, you know, that and that usually is fairly small. It's usually measured in milliseconds. And, you know, anything, pretty much anything below 100 or 200 milliseconds, and the Mac OS X default buffer, which is 32K, at least in Tiger, that buffer is plenty big. You know, in the old days, the buffers were like 8K. And really, once you got above 100 milliseconds, that there would actually be some lag there where, you know, it made a difference. If macOS 10 being at 32K, most of us are all right. For the fiber connections that John mentioned, the latency can actually be pretty high, but the bandwidth can be really high. So Apple has released that broadband tuner that you might have seen come out a couple of months ago. I think it came out right before Macworld. And that will increase your send and receive buffers all the way up, I think, to like 132K on the send buffer and like 355K or something on the receive buffer. And of course, that pretty much solves any of the problems that you're having with that Fios thing. You can do it otherwise. It's not going to hurt anything. Most of us have plenty of RAM in our Macs, but there's just no reason to do it that way if you don't need to.
Yeah, and I've seen mixed reports on some of the utilities that are used to tune. Yeah. I've seen mixed reports on some people. They said, okay, here is my download speeds from whatever site, and yep. then I applied, you know, the tuning patch, and some people say it got better, some people say it got worse. And, you know, you got to be careful because, you know, just because you applied something and things got better doesn't necessarily mean that that was the thing that made it better.
That's right. Yeah, it could have been a lot
of
things.
There's lots of people on the internet, you know, things could have changed. So if, you know, you may want to run your tests at different times during the day and using different sizes and, you know, get a good data set to make sure that what you did, because personally, I get nervous digging in the innards of, even though it's great fun, I get nervous digging in the innards of something because usually it's probably set up to deal with most situations.
That's right.
But hey, if you like fiddling, just, you know, be careful. Now, and I do believe with the broadband tuner that Apple offers, you know, they do have a way to undo it.
They certainly do. Yeah, they sure do.
And, you know, just good geek technique. If you're going to change some values, you know, write down somewhere what they were before.
That's right.
So you don't screw things up further when you try to undo it and you make matters even worse.
That's right. Yeah.
Just, so you can benefit from our sometimes disastrous
Well, that's what happens when you experiment. That's right. Yeah, sometimes you are going to screw things up. It's just the nature of the beast, but, you know, that's what makes it fun, right?
Yeah. Now, I think one way here, if you want to look at latency, just to get a warm fuzzy here about what your latency is, there should be a way to figure out what your default gateway is, or the IP address of the router that you're talking to, which is the machine that pretty much you're dealing with.
Not necessarily the one local to you, right? Because a lot of us run NAT routers or, you know, the Linksys broadband routers or any of those things. That's not the router John's talking about.
Yes, and actually, I was just going through this right now.
You want to go to the next one? That's right. And the way John's doing it, I'm gonna make a guess here that you're using a command line utility called traceroute. Is that right, John?
I actually did ping.
Ping. Okay. Well, but
I pinged the router.
But how
that's
did you
basic...
find out? How did you find out what your router was?
Good question. So actually, we should rewind a bit here.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah, we're here. We're both here for you. Yeah. But first off, I would strongly discourage anybody from getting a cable modem and plugging the cable modem directly into your computer.
Yeah,
you
well, if you want to,
me on that?
As a general security practice, I would. It putting a router in the way. What John is suggesting is putting. Taking a device, typically called a router or a firewall even, and putting that between you and the outside world, i.e. the cable modem. Like I said, as a general rule of thumb, definitely I recommend it. And then obviously down the road, if you want to share that connection between multiple computers, that's certainly the easiest way to do it. But on the Mac, I wouldn't worry quite as much as I would on a Windows machine, simply because of all the exploits that are in use on Windows. On the Mac, if I plugged it in or if I had to, you know, make something wide open to the outside world, I'm not really that worried because it's fairly well locked down. Obviously, if I opened up, you know, a mail server or something and let the world go through it, that's my own darn fault. But otherwise, it's not a bad idea.
Yeah. Cause a lot of machines, especially the Windows machines, if you plug it in, especially the older versions of Windows, the newer ones, especially with XP Service Pack 2 and all that fun stuff, you plug into a network, and you're probably going to pick up something in a few minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the thing is, you know, the IP address ranges for cable modems and high speed services are pretty well known to the
people are constantly scanning
out there.
Yeah.
And I saw that. I mean, for a while, I set up what, you know, some refer to as a honeypot, which is basically a, you know, something that looks like something interesting, but really isn't. And actually, I would have Windows ports open, Windows networking ports open, but there wasn't anything there because I was running on a Mac, and I would have a firewall that would alert me when someone was, you know, trying to probe, you know, looking for things like, you know, for example, the Windows shares, which I think are on ports 137, 139, things like that. And I would get stuff galore. I mean, they were all over
constant
the place.
Scanning.
It was getting ridiculous. Yeah. I eventually turned it off because it was
actually,
getting so bothersome.
That's a good point. You know, the Macs do now offer you the ability in the sharing system preference to turn on what they call Windows sharing, which will advertise your Mac to Windows computers and, if they know the right login, let them see and interact with your files and printers. So, yeah, if you're doing any kind of file sharing on your Mac, then I would say don't plug it directly into a cable modem. But otherwise, you're all right. You know, you're probably all right. I know there's some attorney out there that's cringing when I say you're fine.
So how did you find?
Yeah, John, we're still talking about latency, or at least I thought we were.
And right, so, but of course, I'm not going to ping.
Yeah, that's right.
The train's kind of wobbly here right now.
Yes.
So what did I do? So, of course, I didn't, you know, because if I went on my Macs here, which are behind, I have a Linksys WRT.
How did you find out the address of the router?
How did I find out? I went to the router, which its address is a non-routable address, and I basically went to the status screen on the router, and it told me that my default gateway is, I'm not going to tell you what it is,
that's
but
right.
It's basically an address that is not a 10.0.
Right.
1.1 address or one of those non-routables, because that's typically what this device does. Is it does something called NAT, network address translation.
Yep.
Which translates so you kind of have two sides to the device. You have the outside.
We don't need to go there.
Yeah, we won't go there. And then
we've gone
inside.
Deep enough on that stuff tonight.
Yeah. So I want the outside address. So basically, I got the default gateway address.
Okay.
And then I went to the command line and said ping. Now you can also do this. I believe it's network utility in your utilities folder also has a ping.
That's right.
I did it on the command line.
Yeah.
And so at least this is one test. And so I pinged my router, and I'm getting about 7 milliseconds.
Okay.
Turnaround.
And what John's talking about, another way to do this is open up a command line, type the word traceroute, traceroute, use the network utility. It does the same thing. It runs the same tool. And so you're going to type traceroute space and then some computer. www.apple.com is fine. It will get you out, right? You do that, you can, whatever. You're looking usually for the second hop if you've got a router, or the first hop if you don't. And then what you want to do is back to the command line, or again in the network utility, type ping or select ping and type in the address of that router. And you'll see it in... You know, the dotted decimal, or the dotted, what do they call that? It's not dotted decimal.
Dotted quad.
Dotted quad, thank you. Yeah. The dotted quad format. And you're looking for the answer in milliseconds. Really, it's also good to look down that list, and Traceroute will show you a little bit of this. So you've got it. You've got the latency numbers right there in milliseconds with Traceroute. And look at what it takes to get almost at Apple.com. Usually Apple.com won't respond to a Traceroute directly.
But you got to be careful, I think, because some devices don't appreciate you doing this.
No, well, you don't want to do it all the time.
Some things may not respond to the ping, but at least the first few hops. Like in my case, I looked at the first few and I got 8 milliseconds, 13, 7, 11, 10, 9 milliseconds. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Say. So it looks like I don't, you know, I'm not having a big delay talking to, and, you know, it gives the address of all the...
No, but it's good to look at the end of the chain, because that's really what matters. That's the computer you're actually talking to, right? And and so, you know, if your delay, if there is some big lag out there in the middle somewhere, you know, that's something to be aware of. Try looking at a couple of different places and see if it's only going to one site and not another. But if you can get an idea of what your average latency is between you and the last hop for a lot of these, then you'll know. If it's less than 200, typically, you're fine. If it's more than that, then you might want to run that Apple Broadband Tuner to open things up a little bit.
Like I got, for example, I pinged Apple.com, Apple, and I got pretty much around 90 milliseconds.
Yeah, so you're fine. And I'm getting the same thing here, too. So.
Yeah. So there are other tools. So there's the Speakeasy.
Yeah, the Speakeasy.
Now, there's also what I found is very nice is Activity Monitor.
Yes.
Which we talked about last week, of course. But there is a network portion there, and that has a nice little graph.
Yes.
You may want to look at that guy, too.
Yeah, and it can tell you what your throughput is and all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. That's that. Hey, so we have a couple other things to go through here quickly. But that's that. If you do have any questions about cable modems or have anything to add, next week is going to be an entire reader, listener feedback show, because we keep saying we're going to do that each week, and we wind up getting into our gab, and then there's no time.
Yeah, wow. Oh, my gosh. Look at the time.
The time. My goodness, look at the time.
But I think we covered a lot of good, meaty, geeky, stuff there.
So
just be careful out there.
I had a couple of... You sound like the guy from Hill Street Blues.
Yep, Hill Street Blues. I've got a link to that.
That's actually a good segue there. Michael, of course, who is so kind as to do our enhanced feed conversion each week, and he'll, I'm sure, have put a link into Hill Street Blues, asked me to ask you what you think of the enhanced feed. And I know there's actually quite a few of you out there that are downloading it. I think it's, you know, more than 10% of you actually are getting this enhanced feed. So we'd love to know what you think about it. He basically does this and we upload it. There's you know, not a whole lot of censorship. In fact, none really going on. Occasionally he'll ask me something. Should I put this in? Should I put that in? But he's doing it. So send us any feedback you have about the enhanced feed to, of course, MacGeekGab@MacObserver.com. And we will forward that along to Michael and make sure it's exactly what you want. And speaking of you, we're running our survey. Now,
them.
But really not all of them. If you're hearing this, you're a very special listener, right? Because we haven't selected everyone to fill out the survey. It's only for you. And them and the rest of them. There's a link in the show notes. We, of course, along with Backbeat Media, which we explained last week, are running a visitor demographics survey just to collect some general information. There is an iPod Nano, at least one of them, in it for a lucky listener of the Mac Geek Gab that goes out and fills out the survey. And if tons of you fill it out, there will be even more. So please do that.
Because, you know, we don't even know if anybody's listening to this thing.
Oh, don't say that.
Sorry. Of course we do, because you vote for us.
That's
you
right.
You give us awesome, awesome feedback
The
iTunes
great.
And Podcast Alley. Thank you so much. And you email us, you tell us what you like, you tell us what you don't like.
Yeah, so, you know, the survey is just another way of telling us how you experience the show and how you prefer to do things. It just kind of gives us an idea here so that... Really, frankly, so that the ads that we have on the show are better targeted to you. And that's better
here.
That's better for you and for the sponsor and ergo for us. So, I mean, really, it's that's exactly why we're doing it. So
we're here for you.
Yeah. So, hey, Lisa, my wife, ordered one of those calendars that you can get through iCal these days, the new
nice.
Ones. Dude, it's awesome. It looks amazing. They really did a great job. It's, you know, totally integrated and bound. There's nothing... You know, with the first books that we got, some of the cover picture was, like, stuck on there with this cheap glue and stuff. It's not that way at all. This thing rocks, and it just looks great. They really did a nice job with it. So, if you haven't...
We got some people pointing out the fact that it seems you can do the cards.
Right, you can print the cards, but not the calendars on your own Mac. That's right.
And I don't know if they meant to do that. Do you think they did?
Oh, who knows?
It almost seems like a bug. But
could be.
Don't tell anybody.
That's right.
Yeah, you can print it out to a PDF and print it on your own if you have the right stock and all that. But don't tell anybody.
That's right. So hey, Mike, remember how I was kvetching when I got my MacBook Pro that all my usernames and passwords in Safari were gone?
I wish I could forget, but yes, I remember.
They came back magically.
Oh, that scares. Oh, you know that type of stuff just really scares me.
I think
things just come back and you don't know why.
I reset my dot. Now, mind you, .Mac sync had nothing to do with this coming in. They just simply weren't there. I hadn't synced or anything yet. They just didn't migrate properly. But
really?
But then I had to reset my .Mac sync. Things were totally out of sync on the Macs that I sync with. So I wiped it all out and signed up each computer. And after I ran it through one of those, it just, they magically reappeared. So I think the .Mac sync did it. But Thank goodness. So .Mac is able to, if we follow Apple's story on this, right, they said that it was an incompatibility between the PowerPC and the Intel chip that they couldn't get my passwords to lock into Safari. So .Mac Sync is actually able to overcome incompatibility problems, if you believe what they said to me.
I don't buy it.
I don't buy it either.
No, as long as you select your keychain is something that you want to sync in .Mac Sync. I don't see why the
platform
should matter. Yeah,
no,
I think it was a snow job.
I think that's what I told him. So I want to start doing something because my goodness, we might as well do something about all the spam that we get. And I want to talk about the spam of the week, and it was inspired this week by one that I actually read. And it was a trick spam. It was from eBay, but it wasn't the typical eBay. I'd never seen this before. This one looked like it came from eBay, and it said, look, you bid on something, and you haven't, you know, it's been weeks, and you haven't, you haven't done anything about it, and you're going to get negative feedback, and eBay's going to come after you.
I got that one, too.
Yeah, and I thought, wow, I read through it and then look and saw that it was addressed, of course, to MacGeekGab at MacObserver.com, and I thought, well,
I didn't know we had an eBay account.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wait, we don't.
We don't, right. I have an email address that I use for nothing but eBay, and it's been, I don't know why I did that on day one, but it has been the saving grace, because I don't use it for anything else, so it's not on any of the spam lists. So I am 99% certain when something comes into that email address that it's from eBay, so.
Yep, and you know another clue for me?
What's that?
I know it comes from eBay because it has my member name.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, good point. That's right. So that was my favorite spam of the week. And this coming week, John and I will both look at our spam. And you look at your spam, too. And maybe send it in with an audio comment. Don't forward spam to us because
we get plenty.
We got it. If you
but
get
we filter it out.
We've already got
it. My favorite actually was, please reauthorize your Chase Bank account. Yeah, here's the problem. I don't have a Chase Bank account.
Yeah, that's right. So that's look at the time. My goodness, look at the time.
Oh, you let the band back in.
I did.
But actually it's nice out, so they're not freezing out there.
It's actually pouring rain here tonight.
Really? Yeah, we're supposed to get severe thunderstorms tonight, but now it's just kinda foggy. But it's spring. It's like in the 50s. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Do you think we're done with winter here in glorious?
New England. I don't want to say, because if I say anything, there's going to be a blizzard.
I know. It was 60 this weekend, though. That was nice.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else we have to go through here. No,
I think we've kept our listeners long enough. And thank you for sitting with us.
We do. Thank you very much for subscribing.
Or running in circles, whatever you do.
Absolutely. Okay, so I want to say thank you to our sponsor, AudioEngineUSA.com. Of course, you've downloaded this from CashFly.
Mm-hmm.
Audio feedback to MacGeekGab at MacObserver.com. Show notes will be at MacGeekGab.com or MacObserver.com/podcast.
You can call us at 206-666-GEEK.
Geek.
Yeah, I guess that's it.
Next time I'm going to hit record. It's going to be great.
Oh.